Well, I quit recording 15 years ago when my son was born. He'll be 16 in the summer. He's 6 feet tall now, and he doesn't need his mother around anymore, so that's obviously why I'm able to come back now. During the 15 years, for the first 5 and a half, I was on Sesame Street. Then when it came time for my son to go to school, I just decided to stay home in Hawaii and to do only those concerts that I really, really wanted to do, which took two forms, really. One, I continued to do big, fancy European concerts where UNICEF, they wouldn't pay me any money, but they'd bring me over on the France, they'd put me up in the Ritz Paris, and they'd send me home in the Concorde. And then the other kind of concert that I've continued to do, which is just as much fun and just as worthy a use of my time, has been concerts in native areas, either on reserves or, for instance, in Toronto to raise money for the Friendship Centers. During that time, when I was taking a lot of time off, I was continuing to write. I wrote some hits for other people. I got very lucky with a song called Up Where We Belong from the movie An Officer and a Gentleman, for which I won an Academy Award along with my two co-writers, Jack Nitzsche and Will Jennings. And I scored lots of movies, many of them documentaries, but not all, some feature films. I continued to upgrade my electronic music skills, my recording skills, and my computer skills. That's what I really like to do. I do. I have a fully digital studio in my house. I have one person who helps me with it, who's my tech, my engineer, and who also, along with me and my son, plays every instrument you can think of. So when we were making this album, I came up with a little cassette tape, and I was playing all the instruments, and a friend of mine had the cassette, and somehow it got into the hands of Kate Hyman, who was at the time working for Ensign Records, who were a little company in London. They only have six artists, and their artist last year was Sinead O'Connor. You know, she's a writer, and she's very independent-minded person with her own issues. And the other people on the label also are writers with their own agenda. So Nigel Grange and Chris Hill, who are former disc jockeys and record freaks in London, record collectors, and they did nuts for records, they liked my demos. And they insisted that the album be as artist-intensive as the demos were. They didn't want to, you know, send it off to Hollywood and have it sound like it had been neutralized by lots of other more mainstream musicians. They liked the way I was doing it. So I did. I continued to record other songs and put them all together for this album. It could have been 11 different songs, but these ones all seem to go together very well. They're a mix of both political and non-political songs. I've always written big love songs, like Until It's Time for You to Go and Up Where We Belong is a big love song, and some of the other songs on this new album, like Good Night and Emily, are just purely love songs. And then the other kinds of songs that I write either give you some new information, like Star Walker. Star Walker is a song about the joy and triumph of native life. I've used real people's names. There really is somebody named Holy Light, and it's my brother-in-law. And there really is somebody named Lightning Woman and Thunder Child. And it just expresses the joy of and encouragement that I feel within the native community that now, happily, a lot of non-native people are getting to see, you know, with the headlines being so positive these days. I wrote Star Walker when I was pregnant with my son, yeah, and I dedicated it at the time to the American Indian Movement. So I'm giving people new information. I think a lot of non-native Canadians tend to look upon native people as victims only. They seldom see our joys and the pride and triumph that we feel for one another. There are a lot of native people whose names you'll never see in the paper, but they're out there hitting home runs every day. And it's really wonderful to see. Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, on the other hand, which shares its title with a book by Dee Brown. The title actually comes from a poem by Stephen Vincent Benet. Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee is also giving you new information, but it's a very sad song. It's an up-tempo rocker of a song, but it's about the murder of the American Indian Movement. It, too, is giving you some new information, as is The Priest of the Golden Bull. The Priest of the Golden Bull is about uranium mining on native reserves and the corruption in politics and the business world that affects everybody. It says money junkies all over the world trample us on the way to the bank. They run in every race. When I see something that is just horrifying to me, like the dumping of uranium waste on Indian reserves and into the river that pollutes not only my world but yours, because we all belong to nature, they'll dump it on my side of the river. Your laws protect you from dumping them on your side of the river, but they are dumped on Indian sides of the river, but it's everybody's river. When I see something horrifying like that, when I write about it, I try to bring into it something of the innocence and wonder that the average person feels just before you discover this. Like Priest of the Golden Bull, the way that I'm speaking the words, to me, I'm picturing myself as a 17-year-old secretary in an office who's hearing this information for the first time. I mean, listen to the way that she's speaking. Who brought the bomb wrapped up in business cards and stained with steak? This is the first time that she's realizing the way the world is run. So although you can look at it at first and say, oh, this is cynical, it's not really. It's not really. It has the kind of reality which involves us as innocent people confronting situations that are horrifying to us. I think that it's very important when you're presenting a hard-hitting subject matter in a song to have easy-to-take music and to also have the emotional content be right. For instance, The Big Ones Get Away is about a sad situation that could affect anybody in the world. That song could have been written in Tokyo or Toronto or Hawaii or Australia or anywhere. It's the kind of thing that people are going through in Belfast and South Africa and every place, you know. The thing to focus on is the woman, not who she's singing about, but the woman, her compassion and her love for her husband who's been sold out by the corrupt system to which he was loyal. It could be that he's been sold out by his corporation or by his country or by his provincial politics or his police force. Anyway, here's this guy who all his life is just adoring to be a part of the guy's network that brings you things like James Bond, the bomb, industrial pollution, etc. And he's good at it. And he's proud that he's good at it. And he's making some money being good at it. And then he stands up and tells the truth. Ah! And they ruin his life. They ruin his life. And here's his wife who loves him and who can see exactly what has gone on. So it's really the story of a wife loving her man, even though it's time for him to pay the consequences of having been true, honest, and loyal to a corrupt system. The music that I use for The Big Ones Get Away and Fallen Angels, even though they're about power junkies and money junkies, the music is the same old rock and roll chords that always satisfy. C to A minor to F to G. It always satisfies. It was used in the Still of the Night. Earth Angel. Sting used it in Every Breath You Take. It's everybody's first piano number, Heart and Soul. Same old chords. C, A minor, F, G. It's always satisfying, and it's the perfect, calm, satisfying vehicle through which I want to say something that's very strong. In the song Starwalker, I didn't want it to sound like it was being recorded in my digital studio in Hawaii. I wanted it to sound like outdoors. To me, the sound of a powwow is so much fun. The ambience of a powwow, people walking around with bells on their ankles and talking, you know, just the kind of the undercurrent before the dancing starts. So I had a cassette that I'd made just at home on my own, you know, the reserve that I come from in Saskatchewan. And, you know, it was kind of a scratchy old cassette demo. You know, it was just a nothing, just a cassette. So I just took a little sample of it, a little maybe 8 to 10 second piece, and stuck it on the front of Starwalker and left it going as a loop under the song, and it makes it sound like it was recorded at a powwow. The guitar playing is a combination of Roger Jacobs, who's my studio tech and my co-writer for Getting Started, and another guitar player named George Deering. I overdubbed one on top of another to get a real biting song. I went bam, ba-ka-ba-ka-down, down. I wanted like a ZZ Top brutal guitar sound because I love them. And of course, the song is, it's about brutality. It's about a woman being beaten up at home, and she doesn't think she's going to get out of it alive. And that's going on in 1 in 4 relationships, you know. But nobody's writing about it. I mean, watch heavy metal on television. It's like watching opera. I happen to like it. But there are a lot of stories to be told that are not being told. And I don't know, I just took a chance and told that one because I think it's very real. Bad End is not particularly positive, except that I'm still here to sing about it. Big Ones Get Away, I think, is very positive because we're talking about something that needs to be talked about, and obviously the woman would do anything for this man who's going through a hard time. That's pretty positive, I think. Fallen Angels just has a sense of humor about it, you know. The real power in the real world going to deny it all anyway, you know. It's cynical, but it's like we're all in it together. Getting Started is a very positive song. It says, come on. It's like we, human beings in the world in the 90s, we're like kindergarten kids. Give us a break, you know. Let's learn how to forgive ourselves and one another for the various things that we do, you know, culture against culture, person against person. Because that's the way we progress. I mean, here we are all in kindergarten. We'll be lucky if we ever even get a glimpse of a second grader. That's how young we are as a species. So, you know, let's acknowledge our youth and grow up and go on to, you know, discover even more exciting things than what we have going on now. I'm Going Home is a very positive song. Certainly Star Walker is. And Good Night, of course, is a love song. So it's a mix of various things. In my career, I've seen some of the strength of my songs overpower the beauty and positivity of my songs. I think it's because it's so unusual for someone to see a woman writing songs of real kind of epic strength, you know, big three-act plays, and call forth a response from the listener that, God, this is true, that's right. It's unusual, so I think sometimes people will forget that I wrote Until It's Time for You to Go, which is a love song, or Universal Soldier, which is a positive song of individual responsibility. I mean, who's responsible for war? Is it? I mean, that came from a real thing that happened to me, a real personal experience. I was in an airport in San Francisco when they were bringing, you know, they were telling us that there wasn't a war in Vietnam, and I was watching them bring soldiers in on stretchers, you know, all bandaged up and blown apart, and I was talking to some of the guys escorting these soldiers, and they knew there was a war in Vietnam. Students knew there was a war in Vietnam, but still the media was saying that there was none. And I got to thinking, well, who's responsible for war? Is it these soldiers? To some certain extent, yes, it is. Oh, maybe it's the generals. To some extent, it is. But who points the soldiers and the generals? It's the politicians. And who elects the politicians? It's you and me. So I always have in my songs a sense of not being the one to criticize somebody else, but I'm part of it. Unfortunately, I'm part of it. And my part of making it better is sort of to present it in the way that I see, and it usually is with a good deal of compassion. I came up at a certain time in the music business when, if I had been a couple years earlier or a couple years later, I wouldn't be in the music business at all. It's like I came in through the window when students were hungry for new ideas and coffee houses were becoming popular. Now, coffee houses are very different from drinking establishments. Caffeine is a different kind of drug from alcohol. Caffeine makes you talk and makes you listen and makes you have conversations and makes you study and read and blah, 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 blah. And coffee houses were a very big thing in the 60s. It was like a youth movement, like a student movement. Everybody and his sister had a guitar. People thought nothing of writing songs. Everybody wrote songs. I mean, writing songs, that's nothing. Anybody can write a song. Show business was not separate from the student movement. They were the same thing. Then Kennedy was killed. Martin Luther King was killed. Bobby Kennedy was killed. The coffee house movement was killed. Coffee houses closed because they were having tax problems all of a sudden as soon as Johnson came in. Coffee houses reopened with liquor licenses in order to make a living. The student movement, we had Kent State. I went on television and I was asked not to talk about Native issues at all. It was put as if I talked about Native issues, then I was being a racist, and not to sing Universal Soldier because we're tired of that stuff. And disco came along. And it never occurred to me, this is how naive I was, and probably still am, it never occurred to me that there was a suppression coming down from the White House. I had to be told that. Radio broadcasters came forward and apologized to me in public, saying that they were sorry for having been a part of suppressing my career, and that they had letters from the Johnson White House commending them for having suppressed my music, which deserved to be suppressed. Now, that was a very strange time, but for me it wasn't a strange time, because I was making a lot of money and having a wonderful career in Europe. It took me 10 years to find out that I had been suppressed. I wasn't the only one. A lot of other people, Eartha Kitt, Taj Mahal, lots of other people were. But it was mostly people who were kind of bubbling under and saying real strong things. It wasn't somebody who had a real strong manager, you know, and a lot of money. I mean, nobody suppressed Bob Dylan or Joan Baez, I believe. It was people who were kind of lone wolf types with very original ideas. I wasn't a folk singer, and folk singing was what was happening. And I was being written about and called a folk singer, I think because I had long hair and a guitar. But I was a writer. I was writing songs. There were real folk singers around, like Pete Seeger and Joan Baez, who actually were singing folk songs. Being around real folk songs gave me it raised my standards as a writer. It made me want to write a song that would have made sense in the Roman Empire and hopefully will make sense 20 years from now. It made me want to write songs that would cut across language barriers and international political situations. Because folk songs, you know, what are they about? They're about great love songs. You know, I love you so much, what am I going to do? That kind of love dilemma song. Or else political songs. They say I'm a thief, they're going to hang me, you know I didn't do it. You know, political dilemmas. So it gave me a very high standard as a writer to be around songs that had already lasted 500 years. And I've got a lot of education. I got 3 college degrees. My first degree was in teaching, and my second degree was Oriental philosophy and religion, because I enjoy hearing about other people's experiences with the Creator. And then my third degree is in fine arts. So the way I combine them all is in songs. I love to write songs. I like to write about things that everybody's feeling out there in the streets, whether they're in Tokyo or Toronto. Everybody's feeling, and nobody's said it yet. And I want to do it in 3.5 minutes in a song. I don't want to write a movie about it. I don't want to write a book about it. My art is 3.5 minutes, and it's really fun, and it's really a challenge. Hawaii is very beautiful. I think what appealed to me most, besides the obvious natural beauty of Hawaii when I first saw Hawaii, was the multi-ethnic feeling of Hawaii and the aloha spirit, which really is something. If you go shopping in Hawaii, you know, the person who waits on you will probably be half Dutch, half Samoan, or, you know, they'll be Tahitian, French, and Japanese, you know, all kinds of beautiful ethnic combinations. The graduating classes in the high schools, it looks like a bouquet of flowers. Beautiful, beautiful people from all over the world living in a healthy environment. Communicating with one another. I think the Pacific Rim is extremely hip. Technology is obvious. And it's not like I'm living out in the middle of nowhere, although I am kind of a hermit type. I mean, I get CNN, I get MTV. I can contribute through my computer. I can do all my paintings in my computer and not have to clean anything up. So it's a very nice life. And my computer keeps me happy indoors when it rains. The record company wanted me to make my album pretty much like my demos had sounded. They didn't want to import other people. They wanted to use Chris Burkett, who had helped Sinead get her album on tape. And Chris's mandate was to help me get things on tape. He wanted to stay home with his family. I wanted to stay home with my family. So what I would do is I'd sit at my keyboard, which is attached to my computer through cables, and I would play my keyboard part, and while I'm listening to my keyboard playback, I play my bass part, and I listen to those two playback, and at the same time, I play my drum part, on and on and on and on, until I get it just like I like it. And then I pick up my telephone, which is also attached to my computer, and I dial my co-producer's phone number in London, where he is at his studio, and then I press a button, and the music goes down the phone lines, bounces off the satellite, and goes onto tape in London. And what an easy way to record. It's as easy as using a Walkman. And sometimes people who are computer resistant say, oh, God, I'm not, that's too complicated for me. But it's not complicated. It's very simple. And I'm glad to have lived so long that I can make an artist intensive record, you know, where it's saturated with the stuff that I wanted to put on it and isn't buried under all kinds of other people's ideas of how it should sound. Whether the record sells or not is anybody's guess. We'll have to see if people like it. But I know I like it. I'm real proud to give it to other people, and it was really fun to make. There's a song called Getting Started that I like very much, especially because it has kind of a world beat feel to it. There's music from all over the world in there. Now, none of those people from other cultures were actually in my studio. I just took Earl Bullhead and the Bullhead Singers from the Lakota Reservation in South Dakota. They sang in the beginning of Getting Started, and they weren't there. I just lifted it off their tape with their permission and used it to start the song out because it was perfect. They love it. I love it. We all stayed home. How nice, huh? Yeah, some songs just come to me like a dream. They're all done. Words and music in my head. It's like I'm hearing them on a... You know, one day we're going to find out all the songwriters have some kind of fancy MIDI connection to Mars. But no, some songs, like Until It's Time For You To Go, just enter my head and zam, that's where they are. They're all done. But other songs, especially songs like Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee or Universal Soldier, that is fine crafting. That's like sitting down and writing a doctoral thesis. It's like, I mean, I'm not only expressing what I have to express, I'm trying to make sense to you who have never heard the facts before. I not only want to inform you, I want to keep your attention. You have to be just as entertained as you are educated, or I've failed. And if I don't have the guts to find a great guitar player, if I just sit home and, you know, write it folky style, then I've missed the point. When I started making this record, I had much too much material. I mean, I've taken 15 years off from recording. Starwalker is the oldest song on Coincidence and Likely Stories. I wrote it when I was pregnant with my son, who's now 16. Most of the other songs that made it onto the record were written, oh gosh, at different times. Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, I've been writing forever. I finally got it done, that's all. The Priest of the Golden Bull, I wrote quite recently, and I wrote it in one night. The Big Ones Get Away, I wrote 5 years ago during the Iran-Contra affair. And I wrote that in one night as well. Fallen Angels, I wrote the same week as The Big Ones Get Away. And took a couple of days to play with those words. And then I added the bridge just before I started making the record. I don't know if you're interested in this, but as a songwriter, I'll give you some tips. I like to use those triplicate books that you can buy in business supply stores where the pages are numbered, or else just a regular spiral notebook, and I number the pages myself. And sometimes I'll be writing a song, and I don't really finish it, but I know what it's about, and then I lay it aside, and then 2 years later, I'll write some more on the same subject. But I'll remember the first song. And because I have tables of contents in my notebooks, I can find them. I have to hunt around for a while, but I can find them. So that it is possible to write a song tomorrow that I started a long time ago, and then kept embellishing throughout the years, because I tend to be interested in the same themes again and again. It can only sing so intimately. If I have 90,000 people or 9 people, it's the same thing, because I'm singing to the individual in one person. It's like I'm singing to one person. It doesn't feel like singing to 90,000 people when you are. That's such an unreal amount of people. I've sung to huge audiences both in Japan and in Europe. Huge audiences. And you can only get so intimate. If you're singing to one person, then everybody's going to get it. I like being known as a songwriter, though. I'm very proud of myself as a songwriter. It's something I'm not scared to stick up for at all, because I know what I'm writing about. I feel that as an artist, I'm like a camera that's running all the time. And if you want to peek through my viewfinder, you're going to see the world I see. Because I'm very true to what I see. I write about what I see, and you know, you might have a different point of view because you're looking through a different camera, and that's okay too. But I know that if you look through my viewfinder, you're going to see a clear picture. I'm a good photographer of reality. When I started out and made my records, my first records, I can't even bear to listen to them because I think they were so terrible as a singer. I didn't know how to sing. I didn't even want to sing. I was a songwriter who wrote great songs, and I had a lot of heart and emotional integrity, period. But now I listen to them and I say, oh man, you jerk, why didn't you pay attention? So as a songwriter, I was proud of what I did in my first career. But since that time, mostly out of sheer embarrassment, I've learned how to sing a lot better, and being in tune and on time never hurt a good song. So I'm real proud of this current band. In Emily, the woman has all the power in the situation. She kind of lives down in the swamps around New Orleans somewhere, and Emily, she sees the man, and she's got to have him, and she's determined that he's going to love it. So it's a real seductive kind of, yeah, it's a song about a woman's love power. Disinformation is a lot like Fallen Angels and The Big Ones Get Away in its lyrical content. It's really about somebody like a James Bond type, but the real ones who actually are involved in our real world, as opposed to a movie hero in a tux. It says, it's a perverse company you work for. They build the past. It just can't last. It's obsolete by design. So it's from the point of view of a woman who loves this man. And she sees what he's involved in. She sees what is getting him off. He loves being James Bond. And it's not that she's critical of him, but she's just describing what it is that's driving him crazy. It says, coincidence and likely stories, they dog your trail like a pack of lies. And the second time that comes up, you can barely hear some dogs going, woo, 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 woo. But it's like it's in his dream. They whine at night when the lights are out. You toss and turn, you pitch and roll, disinformation, you spin it like a silkworm. She obviously has mixed opinions of what he does for a living. She knows he does it good, but what is it that he does? What is it that won't let him sleep? We didn't know what to call this album. Fallen Angels, we thought about that for a few minutes, and said, well, Robbie Robertson had Fallen Angel. Besides, nah, that's a little wimpy. The Big Ones Get Away? Nah, sounds like a fishing album. Nobody knew what to call it. We didn't know what to call it. So finally we said, okay, I want to call it Coincidence and Likely Story. So we did, but I wouldn't care what it had been called. I didn't care. Nobody did, really, and somebody else sequenced the album at the record company. I didn't care. Put them in any order. Throw them up in the air, and any way they come down, they're still good. Good Night is the only song in the album that I didn't write, and I wish I had. Cliff Eberhart wrote this song, and I love this song. It's just the ultimate song about missing somebody. Cliff Eberhart is a songwriter who lives in New York. I heard it by a group in New York, and they turned me on to Cliff, and Cliff has many wonderful songs. He's a wonderful writer. Hi, this is Buffy St. Marie. This is the single from my new album, Coincidence and Likely Stories. It's called The Big Ones Get Away. Hi, this is Buffy St. Marie. This is the second single from my new album, Coincidence and Likely Stories. It's called Fallen Angels. This is Buffy St. Marie. Here's a song from my album, Coincidence and Likely Stories. This is called Bad End. This is Buffy St. Marie. This is the song that gave the album its title. It's called Disinformation from the album, Coincidence and Likely Stories.